Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center, marking 50 years of compassion and care. Learn more at ANHC's Open House, August 5th, or at anhc.org.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Torda. Bikes have a long and fascinating history in Alaska. Today's show features the book Wheels on Ice, Stories of Cycling in Alaska. I'm joined by editor Jessica Cherry and contributor Andromeda Romana Lacks to discuss the book and its many incredible stories. Stay tuned for Outdoor Explorer. We are thrilled today to have Jessica Cherry and Andromeda Romana Lacks on the show to discuss Jessica's book, Wheels on Ice. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and we're on Zoom today. So Jessica, why don't you both go ahead and introduce yourselves. Tell us sort of your involvement in the book.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. My name is Jessica Cherry, and I'm a geoscientist here in Anchorage, Alaska, as well as a airplane pilot, aerial photographer, and writer.
And Andromeda?
Yeah, I'm Andromeda Romano Lacks. I lived in Alaska for 20 years, but now I live on a small island off the west coast of Canada, but I still love staying connected with Alaska books and writers and readers. I've been primarily a novelist. I have my sixth novel coming out next year, but before that, I was a travel writer, a nonfiction writer, and I wrote for We Alaskans, for example. So I'm primarily fiction, but nonfiction once in a while. And I write a Substack newsletter called Unlikely, which is about my adventures training for an Ironman triathlon.
Which involves biking. So,
yes.
Yeah. And Andromeda has one of the stories in the book, which we'll get to. So, Jessica, let's start with you sort of going over the history of the book. It's got a long history, a really long history. So why don't you talk with that and how the book came about?
Yeah, so I had the wonderful opportunity to co-edit this anthology of cycling essays with Frank Sos, who is our former Alaska State Writer Laureate and was a writing mentor and a friend to me, and sadly passed away during the making of the book in a cycling accident. But let me tell you the happy parts about the book, I guess, or the journey it was. And that is, I have a friend. I lived up in Fairbanks for a long time, and I had this friend named Rob who was sort of eccentric, and he really liked old things. So old bicycles, old furniture, old books. And he told me about this book insert that Terrence Cole had edited back in the mid-1980s. And it was published also as an insert in the Alaska Journal, which was a history magazine that no longer exists. But again, that was in 1985. And that contained five stories of Gold Rush era cyclists traveling different parts of the state of Alaska and the Yukon. And it's really a treasure. And so I was working up at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and sitting on the board of the Alaska Press. And that's one reason I knew Frank. He also sat on the board. And we both had this idea sort of at the same time of reprinting the Gold Rush stories, but it wasn't quite enough material. And so we talked to Terrence Cole, who was a longtime historian at UAF, about this idea. And he loved it, of course, and he had a whole box of clippings that he had saved, columns like We Alaskans that Andromeda mentioned, and many other things, random clippings from really all over the country about cycling. And at about that same time, we learned that Terrence had terminal cancer. And so then we had this sort of urgency, well, let's get going on this project. And so we went through Terrence's box of clippings and picked out the stories we thought might be suitable. And I went ahead, I had the technical skills, so I went ahead and digitized all those. And then at this point, the pandemic started, and you know, we were all on lockdown, and I was in Anchorage by this point, and Frank was still in Fairbanks, and we talked over the phone about the pieces, the historical pieces we wanted to use, and then we went ahead and solicited new submissions. And we had to do this largely through social media and, you know, a couple posters and bike stores, but there was a lot of things pretty shut down at this point. But we pulled that together, and then I did a lot of searching in the blogosphere. And that's where I found Andromeda's piece on cycling a big hill here in Anchorage, and kind of setting personal goals and kind of working through the psychology, a lot of that. And I knew Andromeda through the writing community and her work as a book coach and an Alaska writer. So we found a lot of contemporary writers this way, and then we found a way to kind of organize the book in these three chunks of time. So the gold rush was one. All of, another set of material seemed to focus around the Idita sport, which was called the Idita bike for a while. And it really was organized not long after the Iditarod itself was started. And the idea was to get people out using the trails, some of the same incentives as the revitalization of dog mushing, is just to have a reason to get people out and in the wilderness on our historic trails. So, and then the third part of the book really unfolds in the near present with contemporary stories. And Andromeda's piece fits there. And the other interesting thing is we have this missing period in between the gold rush and the 1980s. And I think part of that is really because the automobile became, both the automobile and the airplane were the modes of transportation of those eras. And so we are, well, I found some photos of cycling adventures from those eras. We don't have any stories. So these other eras are kind of organized around resource extraction, first gold, and then you know, the 80s and 90s, the 70s, 80s and 90s, we saw people move to the state to pursue work in the oil industry, and other other people move to kind of get back to the land and pursue that. But I think in the present, we're kind of, all of those resource extractions are kind of uncertain. And so in many ways, I see this book as a history of Alaska told through cycling.
It is. It is a little bit of a history. How did you, it seems like some of the authors are professionals, like Andromeda, and some aren't. And so how did you pick the stories that are, especially the more recent ones?
Yeah, you know, as Frank and I talked about this, we didn't want just trip reports. We wanted something that really got into an essay, and I'm sure Andromeda's had this experience. There's something about writing an essay that's, it's a little bit like riding a bike. It's sort of this wandering around, and there's something about riding a bike that helps your brain work, and you get exciting new ideas, and it's a journey. And so I think we wanted pieces that really hit that note, but I think we try to hit a balance of people who are professional writers, people who are professional riders. We have Lale Wilcox, who really is a full-time professional cyclist. And then a couple of the authors like Jeff Oatley and Clint Hodges, who, well, Jeff had actually never written about any of his adventures. And I think Frank loved his story best. I think he thought it captured, you know, the sort of retelling of that epic Yukon adventure. But I really love Clint's stories. Clint is a Indigenous Alaskan, and I think has a wonderfully rich and powerful perspective to talk about his journey from motorsports actually into cycling and what he's gotten out of that. So I love all the stories. They all have something a little bit different.
I like in the introduction, you and Frank wrote something along the line that Alaska inspires people to do something extreme, quote, for the sake of telling a good story, unquote. And I thought that really sums up the book. And a lot, it really struck a chord with me about, oh yeah, so true.
It is true. And there's something kind of inherently performative about some of these trips that we do, even that we do, maybe it's unconscious, excuse me. But I think something about polar exploration too is also sort of inherently performative and lends itself to writing about or blogging about, including stunning pictures. Some of our contributors are really gifted photographers, and we try to include a few of those photos. But I think I'll let Andromeda speak here for a moment, but I think
Well, yeah. I'm going to jump in. First, I just want to say this is a gorgeous book, and you already referred to some of the essays. The table of contents itself, when I first saw all the names in here, it just made me so happy, because it's not only about history and about Alaska and about cycling, it's like the community, it's a community book. I mean, the names I recognized include your name, of course, Roman Dial, Bill Sherwanet, Corinna Cook, Martha Morey, Don Reardon, I'm going to miss some, Kathleen McCoy. And so I was not able to force myself to read in order. I had to jump around because I was so excited to check in with these people who all have such different experiences with cycling. And I'm using this book mostly for inspiration, because I have to tell you both, I don't consider myself a serious athlete. I'm struggling. I have sort of a love-hate relationship with cycling that I'm trying to turn into a love relationship. So I'm also a reluctant cyclist. Every ride I finish, I feel fantastic, but getting started is really hard. And so just today, I'm planning on going for a challenging ride when this interview is done. And so here I was reading an essay by, it was the woman who talked about a concept I'd never heard of called Everesting, where you cycle in one day as many feet as you would climb on Everest. Corinne Lestico, I believe is her name. And so she's talking about all the steps she had to go to do these different races and rides and then try to build up to 29,000 feet. Well, here I'm, you know, whining to myself about doing my daily ride and doing 4,000 feet. And just reading the essay changed my perspective. I thought, I need to do a 10,000 foot ride. That's what I need to do, because she's doing 29,000 feet. So I think I need to change my goal. But so the book is very inspiring that way. And of course, because it's set in Alaska, there are going to be people who are riding in really cold and snowy conditions and riding in the dark. You even have an essay about somebody using the inside trainer, which is something I have to do and is not always super enjoyable. But it's a very inspirational book in that way.
Yeah, this is Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Tordak. Today, we're talking about the book Wheels on Ice, edited by Jessica Cherry. And we also have one of the authors in the book, Andromeda Romano-Lax, with us. Let's go to the sort of part one, Jessica. This idea of bicycling, and I'd always heard about it, these guys that would bike during the gold rush from Dawson to Nome. So go ahead and sort of talk about that a little bit. That's crazy. Back in 1900.
It is crazy, Paul. And we have pictures, and actually in Terrence's book insert, there are even more pictures. And so we have some idea of the frames. These were the so-called safety bicycle frames. So we got away from the old big wheel style to a bike that has two wheels and a sturdy frame and can haul freight. And this was very well suited to, maybe that's an exaggeration, but some people thought this was suited to carrying cargo up and down the Yukon River. And the timing was the timing of the widespread manufacture of the safety bicycle was right at the start of the gold rush. And being fresh technology, these guys picked it up right away and just jumped on. And another interesting thing is that you see, you mentioned the fat bike, the early fat bikes, which came to be in the late 80s and early 90s. And Simon Rockauer is a cycling mechanic and machinist in Fairbanks, and he was responsible for building some of these early fat tire frames, the Snowcats. And you see that kind of Alaskaneering or experimentation in some of these pictures of these early cycling constructs. Two frames that have been welded together, working in mines, gold mines, and frames being towed by dogs, and all kinds of inventions. And the other interesting thing I found in revisiting some of the historic photographs some of our photography archives here in Alaska is finding pictures of indigenous kids in villages riding homemade bicycles or tricycles. Mm-hmm. And they had been exposed to the idea. They had seen someone riding this, and then their parents or whoever had constructed then a homemade, home invented kid size wooden wheeled tricycle to ride in their community. So very interesting the way this history unfolded with different technologies and then a local Alaska-based reinvention and experimenting. And I think that is such the essence of our culture here in Alaska to improve things for our environment.
Yeah. It also is interesting how in 1900, we were just finishing up the Klondike Gold Rush, and then they had discovered gold in Nome on the beach. And so there was a stampede. And I think these stories really illustrate the idea of a stampede. Like, everybody was selling everything and leaving for Nome. And there were a lot of people. One of the stories, I think the first one's Edward Jensen. It was retold by Ruth Reed, I believe, and from his diaries. And he talks about, he just didn't carry a whole lot of stuff. Like, he didn't have yet his bike and a few clothes, and they would bike, 50, 60 miles a day in March. I mean, they talk about leaving Dawson at minus 48 degrees Fahrenheit with, their big jackets and wool pants and not much else. And then he took about a month to do it to get to the Nome, and I that was really fascinating to me.
Yeah, that's right. And there was this system of roadhouses and shelters and places he described stopping, and some of those are still there, and many of them are not. As you describe, it was sort of a crowded time in that history. There's another story, the third one in the Gold Rush section by Levy.
Yeah.
And here he's going from Point Barrow to Nome along the sea ice. And I try to trace out on a map the place names that he mentions and the kind of time schedule. And for one, it was clear that he was involved in something in Barrow that, was gambling or something that was a little bit dodgy. And then if you follow the timeline, and this was reported secondhand in a Nome newspaper that it's not the Nugget, it was another paper that was in existence at the time, but the story is implausible. And he may have done this ride, but not in the time that he describes. And who knows if the error was his exaggeration or if it didn't get recorded properly in the paper. But it is interesting to think about the place names and the routes these guys might have gone and where the traditional trails might have been. So I did try to, in working on the maps for this project, did try to include some of those place names at least.
Yeah,
but he is a very he's quite the storyteller, and this comes through even though it's recorded by the paper. And he is one of these sort of performative cyclists.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a cyclist before he came to Alaska. The one guy that I mentioned, the first guy, Edward Jensen, didn't know how to ride a bike. Like he was, for some reason, he decided, well, I guess I'm going to ride. He bought a bike, and then he had to learn how to ride a bike. It took him 8 days to ride a bike, and then he rode to Nome. Jensen knew how to ride a bike. Yeah, and what Jess was talking about, he claims that he rode from Point Barrow to Nome in, it's 1,000 miles in 15 days. So that would be a quite the feat by any standard. Yeah, so that's a really fascinating error. And then we get into, and there's some great stories, adventure stories. One guy fell through the ice multiple times. He, they sounded pretty beat up by the time they got to Nome. And then we move on to the next section. And it really starts with, like we mentioned, the Redditons and Iditarod.
Yeah, and one of the stories I was really happy to get was from Charlie Kelly. Yeah. And so with Gary Fisher and a couple other guys, Charlie Kelly really was one of the people who invented mountain biking in the U.S. West, out in California. And he became a cycling journalist and had his own Fat Tire Flyer magazine. And it's actually another one of our contributors, Roma Dial, who helped me pull this particular story. Another friend of mine who's also a cycling journalist put me in contact with Charlie. And we don't have very many stories from outsiders. And maybe this is something that in a minute Andromeda can reflect on too, the way that outsiders talk about Alaska and the far north in their writings. And Charlie's piece is very humorous. He's sort of poking fun at the experience of jumping in a bush plane and being flown out to one of these stops on the Iditarod Trail where they're hosting this Iditabike competition, one of the early ones. I think this was from 1987. And he's both poking fun at the insanity, but also this deep appreciation for how tough these folks are. And there were men and women doing this early Iditarod race. And now, of course, there's a lot more support. This race is now part of the Iditarod Trail Invitational. And it's a multi-sport event that has a foot race and cycling and skiing now. But maybe Andromeda could just reflect for a minute on the way that people from outside write about the far north.
Well, I will point out that there is one essay by an outsider, Michael Finkel, who wrote a really fun piece on rough terrain unicycling, the profile of the man in Seward. And he really focused on just the profile of the Alaskan. So I felt like that one did a good job of not seeming like just an outsider who didn't get Alaska, because he was really focusing on that. I think Alaskans know this. Yeah, outsiders just have a different perspective. And that's why I like this collection so much, because you have so many of the voices. That's why I myself try to be honest about my limited capabilities, because the people in this book do so much more and under such difficult conditions. And I think I think if this were a book about cycling in any other state, I can't imagine how you'd fill a whole anthology, because you just have that incredible historical piece. And then you have people doing amazing things that, you know, and that we would have never even heard about these people, but they are doing just incredible physical acts as far as endurance. So yeah, that all comes across. And I think it comes across the best when it's written by an Alaskan, frankly.
Yeah. One of the ones that we have, a couple from that sort of part two of the book, 1980s to 2000. And I thought Charlie's was quite good. The other one I thought that was sort of interesting was the unicycling. With it's at Peck is his name. That was the one I was referring to by
Michael Finkel about Peck and Seward. Yes.
Right. And so I know Jessica or Dominic, you want to talk about that story a bit? Because it's sort of, again, one of those only an Alaskan thing, maybe. I don't know where else you would find someone who's out unicycling across beaches and mountains and glaciers and so forth.
Well, I can talk a little bit about it. So it's Michael Finkel was writing for The Atlantic magazine in this piece, and it's very high quality writing. And he had the opportunity to sit with George Peck, who until very recently was a judge, a magistrate in Seward, and really profile not just George, but his whole family and kind of the environment of Seward, again, with kind of this perspective of an outsider. And it's very frank. And the story goes that Peck went to the city dump or the transfer station and picked up an abandoned unicycle that someone had left there. And he was curious and he just taught himself how to ride it. And not satisfied with that, of course, he had to start tinkering with the design. We have a picture in here of him cycling up a hill in extra tough boots and jeans on a gravel road. And he is riding what's called the ultimate wheel, which is a unicycle that does not even have a seat on it. It's just a wheel with pedals and direct drive. And George is a real tinkerer. And so he also, you get to hear about in this story, working with a friend of his who's a machinist, and they are building different frames and different designs. But, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to George in the making of this book, and he admitted that he's now in his 80s and that he has reverted back to bicycling in his older age. So it hits all of us eventually.
Right. I tell you, he also inspired so many people. I was yesterday biking and I saw a kid biking, you know, doing a unicycle alongside some icy, ice covered bike path. So pretty, really inspiring. Also, I think the invitational is really influential in all this. It influenced a lot of people, and so I have a bunch of stories about it.
If I can jump in some of the other stories. So you talked about these cycling efforts being performative. I fall into the opposite camp, which is that if I could be invisible on my bike, that's absolutely what I would prefer. And I think there's some writers in the book who would feel the same as I do, that we're really doing something for ourselves. And we're also trying to answer that question in that essayistic mode. Why am I doing this? You know, biking can be really hard, especially when you're going up those hills and you can question over and over again. And so I was reading, I wrote my essay partly to understand that, but that's also why I was reading some of the other essays to understand it. And Jessica has her own essay called Physical Education. And there's just a line here: understanding my body and the simple machines in my life has given me courage. And so I don't know if everyone would relate to that equally or if women would relate to it more. You have the two different elements. You have the building up your body to be able to do this difficult thing that is usually a solo effort. And then you also have to navigate figuring out this machine. You know, it gets flat, the chain falls off. I am terrible with mechanical things. I mean, that's why I've for years stopped cycling entirely and preferred running, where I could just put on my shoes. So when I restarted my relationship with cycling, it was this feeling of, oh no, now I have to deal with this machine again. There's gear. Some cyclists love that, some hate it. But I thought Jessica wrote really well about the sort of getting a sense of identity and competence in both of these areas. I'd love to hear anything that you have to say about that, Jessica.
That's great. We're going to take time for our break. So we'll come back to that after our break. This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordock. You're listening to Alaska Public Media. We're talking about the books Wheels on Ice, and we'll be right back after a quick break.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordock. I have with me Jessica Cherry and Andromeda Romana Lax. Jessica edited the book Wheels on Ice, along with Frank Sos, and Andromeda had a story. Jessica, we ended sort of a question from Andromeda to you about your essay titled Physical Ed, Physical Education. And so tell us a little bit about that and your relationship to the bike.
Yeah, well, you put me on the spot a little bit. I actually haven't talked very much about my own essay in this book tour, but you cracked this wide open, so why not? So my story, I compare sort of a voice of experience and a voice of innocence in reflected towards my interaction with a couple of interns we had in our office one summer, and they are young female engineers who are learning to do work in water resources, and they are also both on bikes for the summer here in Anchorage, tootling around, exploring the city, and they're in the process of growing up and starting new kinds of relationships. And I went through, of course, a similar experience when I was their age. And now in my middle age, in my mid 40s, I'm reflecting back on that experience. And when I was their age, I was living in New York City and I was doing a lot of cycling. And I had, I guess, gone from undergraduate to graduate school and was doing a little bit of racing. And at the same time, really learning about myself, both intellectually and physically. And graduate school is a time when you do a lot of learning and a lot of growing up. And so that's really what I'm writing about. And when I say physical education, I mean both my own body, my own sexuality, and also the physics of fixing machines and learning how they work. And I guess in the third part of this that I pull in as I transition into Alaska is that I became an airplane pilot and just became totally infatuated with airplanes and flying and airborne science. And there are times when I've thrown my bicycle in the back of my plane because I go land someplace, and often the airport is pretty far from the community. But for me, that I've cycled since I was a kid, and that was an important way for me to become independent from my family, and learning how to fix flat tires and using my bike to get to my first jobs. I've just had a whole life of cycling, and much of it not very hardcore, but commuting and getting places and seeing the landscape in a lot of the same ways that I've now done so with airplanes, just a different perspective. And I don't think if I hadn't proven myself to be somewhat capable of maintaining bicycles, I don't think I would have felt comfortable then learning to maintain airplanes. And so, you know, in the meantime, I've aged and am now, you know, learning how my aging body works. And so another one of the pieces in the book by Kathleen McCoy is about sort of a similar transition. She talks about doing some touring in Europe as a young person and then kind of reflecting back on that as she's aged. And biking is something that's super accessible. We put kids at very young ages on trikes and bikes, and you know, if they're lucky, they have access to those, and they don't always fit and they don't always go fast, but it's how many of us get our start in interacting with machines that is just part of modern living. So that's a little bit what
I agree. And you also mentioned independence. I think for some of us who maybe didn't bike for years and then come back to it as an adult, you get on that bike and you're reminded how you felt as a kid. You know, you get to move fast. You get to go farther away from your home. It extends your reach. And so there's that excitement of the independence that you feel. But also, again, going back to the mechanical competence, Jessica, for someone like me, I still remember, and actually, let me explain this, explain the Killer Hill essay and then where I am now. When I decided to go up Potter Hill, that was in 2006. And the first time I did it, I thought, oh, okay, it's going to be horrible, but it's going to be brief and it'll be over. And I tried going up the hill and, you know, it takes me longer than I think it should, but I'm feeling pretty happy with myself. Then I go home and realize I'd gone maybe only one third of the way up the hill, you know, so I hadn't actually done it. And so that's what the essay is about, deciding I'm going to conquer this thing and I'm going to keep going back, and then realizing really why I was doing it. You know, it was a way to deal with stress. It was an incredibly difficult year for me. I had a first novel that was coming out, a lot of financial issues, two deaths in my family, and throwing myself against this hill and this short, hard effort was a way of regaining some sense of control and mastery and all that. So I wrote that essay and then I stopped biking. So that essay comes out in maybe 2006. And then I turned my attention to running mainly. Well, when Jessica contacted me, we were talking and it must have been around 2021, when she mentioned this essay that I'd completely forgotten about. And I was actually nervous to reread it. I wasn't particularly eager to reread it. But then when I did, it was like a message in a bottle from my younger self to my older self. I thought, wait, biking used to really matter to me. I forgot. And it mattered to me not because it was a sport. It mattered to me for these emotional reasons. And so it's very odd, but my own essay moved me. I thought, wait, this worked before. Can this work again? And so that's when I started cycling again, because Jessica had come to me about that essay. And then I started training for a half Ironman, which I did in fall of that year. And then now I'm on the road to the full Ironman, now having discovered that cycling really is the biggest part of the Ironman, because you're going to spend more than half of the race. And so going from that half Ironman to full Ironman at my age is proving much more difficult than I thought. But it all comes around full circle too. I would not have started biking again had I not been in touch with Jessica. And now I'm continuing to read the other essays to remind me of some of these reasons of why we bike.
And that's it's very inspiring essay, Andromeda, for those who, you know, you overcame a challenge. It's a tough hill that might have seemed very daunting, almost impossible. And you kept at it, till all of a sudden you were doing it. And that's a lot of what this book's about, people sort of persevering and enduring.
Yeah, but then I stopped and I was only 35 years old. So then you come back in your early mid-50s and you realize, oh, that would be much harder to do now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All the more reason to do it.
And there are numerous stories like this in this book, Jessica, about not the hardcore athletes, but people like Andromeda, who are have a great story to tell. You know, one that I really mentioned, Catherine McCoy's Growing Old with My Bicycle. I can relate to that, getting older. Also, I really liked the Books I Carried by Alice Culhane. Do you want to talk about that a second? It was like a biking with a purpose to me. Besides, we talk about, well, this Alaska inspires these people doing crazy things to tell a story about. This one was a little crazy, but right, this distributing books by bike, right?
Yeah, Alice is a real character, and she and her husband actually edited a tour guide to cycling in Alaska, and I think the Yukon too. And you can find that on the used book market. Still, I think it was written in the 90s. But Alice is a very long-term cyclist. She lives up in Palmer now and has a great blog at aliceculhane.com, I believe. And she also runs this amazing volunteer project that she started during the pandemic and then writes about in her essay. And she's threading to make this essay into a whole book. So I think that would be fantastic. But many books are discarded into recycling bins for the paper they contain. And Alice recognized this and began working with the Mat-Su Valley recycling programs to capture these discarded books and then sort them, curate them, and then redistribute them to all these little book stands, all over the state. The focus has started in the Valley and the Anchorage area, but she's worked with a couple of the regional airlines to get books out to rural communities. And I think it's fantastic. These books just would have gone in the trash otherwise. And but Alice is a real storyteller. She has a lot of training in writing and English. And she also tells stories about horseback riding, and she maintains a small farm with pack animals. And so she takes on this just epic journey. I think she started in Fairbanks with this, and was staying with a friend in Esther, and then works her way to various points around the state, including the Richardson, and intends to get down to Valdez, and then has a mechanical problem. And I think her very last leg through Thompson Pass there, I think she gets a ride because again, a mechanical issue on her bike. So and she's hauling a trailer full of books. Yep. And distributing these at campgrounds, and then she makes this linkage to this older book, The Things They Carried, that tells stories about Vietnam soldiers and the meanings that they have in the objects that they had with them on the battlefields. And so that's sort of the link to an older story, but one kind of Alice's generation, and just the things that people discard and the things they keep. So I think it's a really fun essay, and her Bright Lights book project, I think, is really doing some heroic work.
Yeah, lots in here in this book. From everything. Now, the one that to the opposite extreme of that is Jeff Oakley. So he is one of the longer stories, and he rides, I believe, from Skagway to Nome. Is that correct? But mostly solo, a little bit with his partner. Do you want to talk a bit about that story?
Sure. So I actually ran into Jeff Oatley when he was starting this adventure, and I had just gone up to Fairbanks to do an airborne mapping mission in the middle of winter. And I was keeping my plane in Fairbanks at the time, and had circled back there. And so I had just done this pretty extreme adventure in my plane, and I ran into Jeff Oatley at the airport. And he's checking in, you know, this tiny, like, 3-pound bag and his bicycle. And I'm like, and Jeff is a friend of mine. We overlap a little bit in the science and engineering field. He's an engineer. And so, you know, I ask, well, what are you up to? And like, stupid stuff. You know, he's a very soft-spoken, he's got a little Southern drawl still. And is just not a showy, flashy guy. And in fact, when I asked him if he had ever written about his work, and he said, nope. And I said, well, you know, then I asked him about what he was doing, and he described it, and I was like, that's just insane, but I wish you luck, and I know you'll be fine, Jeff, you know. And he's just, he has done that ITI race a number of times and won it before. And beginning to age and kind of reflect on some of these now. And so I circled back to him when we started doing the book, and I said, okay, Jeff, let's get it. Let's get the story. And I paired him with Frank because I didn't know if he was really capable of putting together an essay. Many people are not. And many of us who do engineering and science, that's is like a struggle.
Yeah.
And, you know, they talked a bit and exchanged drafts back and forth. But Frank is a fellow Southerner. And but, you know, that essay is largely how it came to us. And I do think it's great. And
I think some of his descriptions of being out there, you know, by himself in the winter, very cold. I mean, just at 0 degrees is sort of a nice temperature. That just says a lot right there. Okay, minus 20 is okay. Minus 40 is now getting a little cold and then stop working. And then I might get in trouble when I'm at minus 50. That's just a whole different level of mindset. But also for a non-writer, his descriptions of being out in the silence and the aurora and some of his encounters with wildlife, just a really, really inspiring. Not that I ever want to go do something like that, but it's very inspiring.
I want to express admiration for that approach, because in the beginning we talked about how some people are natural storytellers or they're performative. They want to do this stuff and then let people know. And the essay you're describing is an example of, like, we wouldn't have gotten this story if you had not created the book and helped him through that process. And so you're capturing both, you know, almost forgotten history from turn of the century, but you're also getting this history from more recent decades. And it's just such a gift. Thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, there are a few other stories that I just want to mention too, and that, you know, my forays into bicycling come from a real place of privilege, and not everyone is out there on a titanium racing bike or in, you know, state-of-the-art gear. And I think one of the wonderful things about cycling is it is very accessible. You don't have to have a super expensive bike. And in fact, you know, there are people without homes living in places like Fairbanks that have some of the harshest climates on earth, and they are using bicycles to get around. And we do have one indirect story that speaks to that. And there was a man named Philip Tadayuna Penatak living in Fairbanks, and he had he'd come from Nome originally, and Philip was living without a home, and he loved to bike, and he loved to talk about biking, and he would talk to our other author, Jeff Oatley, about his desire to do that I Did a Bike race someday and come into his hometown under the famous arch of the Iditarod. But he was a person without means, and he would speak of Nome as a place that was also traumatic for him. And but he was fit, and he actually did the Tanana River Challenge, which is a race from Fairbanks down to Nenana on the Tanana River. And as the story goes, a few miles into the race, Philip had a heart attack. And he was in the middle of nowhere, and you know, no medical personnel around, and he finished the race. And then he was medevaced to Fairbanks, and he survived. And a couple years later, he after everything this man had been through in his life, he never lost the dream of cycling. And I think that is really something many of us relate to, regardless of our background or our level of privilege, that as Andromeda said a few minutes ago, this cycling brings us back to our childhood, to our innocence, to our first experiences with independence. And you don't necessarily need a very expensive bike to do that or a bunch of fancy gear. So I wanted to mention that story. And then we have a couple other people that speak to riding bicycles as important parts of healthy is getting outside year round. We have another indirect story that Nick Hansen is a famous athlete here in Alaska. He calls himself the Eskimo Ninja and competes in the big commercial ninja competitions on TV. He's from Unalakleet originally, and he grew up BMX biking. And he speaks he does a lot of inspirational speaking, and I've had the opportunity to hear some of those. And he talks about, you know, the scourge of suicide in rural Alaska and how athletics play a really important role in keeping people healthy and providing opportunities to do some travel. And he really, he was in his darkest days when he decided he wanted to, as the story goes, end his life. And he jettisoned his bike off a cliff in Unalakleet. And it was just such an experience that by the time he landed with this bike, he was like, that was rad. And it was just enough, like this adrenaline that we get from being physically active can really pick us up when we're down. And I think that's very important to contemporary life in Alaska, that we remain active, be it bicycling or whatever the sport is. But so many of us have had that.
So backtrack a minute. So he jumped off a cliff on his bike or something.
That's
like
right.
That. Wow. And that sort of inspired him to like, okay, that was fun. Let's go do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Purpose. Yeah.
And that's also my short answer to why I'm training for the Ironman, which is like a 2+ mile swim, 112 mile bike, and a marathon, 26 miles. And the short answer is it's therapy I can afford.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's true with so many outdoor and physical activities. I also like, there's a story, Jessica, about another sort of urban one. That's not all. And I forgot who wrote it about her commute in Anchorage.
Martha Amor. Yeah.
That was a great one. Yeah. I want to talk about that.
Sure. So Martha is an English professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage and lives in Western Anchorage and commutes via bike year round. And she talks about the sort of acquaintances she has who live on the street here in Anchorage and the kind of interaction they have and the way she interacts with people in their big monster trucks. And she talks a little bit about the reasons she's not biking on the trail, because a friend of hers was attacked on the trail. And so you kind of get this gritty picture of urban life and the role that cycling has there. But also the way she feels when she gets to work, it's just, she's so much more inspired than if she had just jumped in her car. And that crosstown commute can be, there can be a lot of traffic. So I think that's a great example of one of these kind of quotidian stories of being enriched by cycling, but it doesn't paint an idealistic picture of these nature surroundings. And so that is the diversity that we really tried to have in the book. And I also want to mention, I got the experience to hear Martha read this story at a couple of our readings. And I've had a number of readers, people that I never even met before in person before the reading. And some of these pieces really light up when they are read in person by their author too. And that's an interesting thing about books and getting the chance to hear them read out loud can really change the story a little bit too.
Yeah. I also think the idea of biking being universal, and whether it's and like a lot of times we think, at least, you know, I think of biking being all these really expensive, almost inaccessible, and a lot of the outdoors really becoming that way. Whereas there's still this culture of biking that's accessible and as a utilitarian part of life. I did a show on off the chain bicycle cooperative or collective. I'm sorry, they call them collective, and how their mission is to make bikes accessible to anybody. And so it's a wonderful effort in Anchorage, and many of your stories sort of highlight that in the book, just how it is. Sure, there's these people, women and men, doing very extreme things, but also the more not mundane, but pedestrian almost use of a bike and how it can bring people together.
You know, I'll mention another thing. You know, Andromeda, in her capacity as a book coach, suggested that one of the things I might want to do after the book is to write an essay about the book. And I did so, and I called it "Polar Exploration is for Everyone." And this was published on the University of Nebraska, who was the publisher, on their press website. And the point of this essay is that polar exploration and even the idea of living in Alaska is kind of a frame of mind. And in fact, I was just back in Nebraska last week and I did a reading and I had some work to do there. But I have a bike that I keep there that I got at a similar charity shop, a little bit like off the chain, a little place called the Bike Kitchen. And I took this ride along this old railroad bed. It's one of these rail to trails. And it's along the Salt Creek, or Salt Creek, as they call it there, in kind of the marginal part of town with the industrial stuff. And it's in the floodway, so there's kind of some marginal housing in there too. But I saw this guy out fishing in this little creek. And that to me is like, here is a person living in a culture where people don't do any of these things on the plains. And you have this guy out, basically in this like industrial dump, and he's like fishing. And this is just like, it's a frame of mind to be an explorer. And you don't have to live in Alaska to do that.
Yeah.
So that is another kind of takeaway that I hope, as I've gone to readings, I've talked to a lot of people about their own cycling adventures, and that is really cool to see the bike spark conversation and, thoughts about different ways to move through our cities and our lives.
That's a great thought. This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordak. We're talking about the book Wheels on Ice with Jessica Cherry and Andromeda Romana Lax. We're about done here with the show. Andromeda, any more thoughts about the book and your experience?
Well, I think I already mentioned to you both at the moment we're done with this interview, I'm going out for a bike ride on our very hilly island where I live. There's some real killer hills that now make Potter Hill seem not so bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just come back around to just getting inspiration. And yeah, there's going to be essays where you think I could never do what these people are doing. And then there's other ones that have much more adventures that you can imagine doing. And so I just applaud the book as being an inspiration for all of us.
Yeah. What a wide range. There's even one about the cryo cave. Mm-hmm. A guy in his Connex on his trainer. So it's all over the board. And where can people find the book, Jessica?
Yeah, people can buy the book in hard copy or digital edition at the University of Nebraska Press website or wherever books are sold.
And we'll have links to the press, the University of Nebraska, correct? Is that right? Press on the Outdoor Explorer website. Thank you both very much for joining me.
It was great.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks to my guests, Jessica Cherry and Andromeda Romana Lax. Their book is called Wheels on Ice, and we'll have a link to it on the Outdoor Explorer website. A big thanks to our producer, Eric Bork. This is your host, Paul Tordak, and from all the hosts at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening, bike on, and we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.